So this is an interview for the Center for the Study of Religion and the City, COVID relief efforts. Abel Gomez and Ariel Mejia interviewing Najomi of the Segurite Land Trust. And so today we're just gonna have some just broad questions about the organization, the work that y'all have been doing, and some of the initial ways that y'all have been responding to coronavirus. So to start, could you tell us a little bit about Segurite Land Trust?
Yeah, so we're an urban indigenous woman-led land trust based in Oakland in the greater San Francisco Bay Area. We focus primarily on returning land to indigenous hands. That's a phrase that Karina uses often in a lot of her speeches and conversations. And what that looks like is you know, some people offering their homes in their written trust or building it into their trust. That looks like collaborating with other community farms and land organizations to rematriate land. And rematriation for us is to work and develop a connection with the land, growing and harvesting and planting traditional medicines, traditional plants and foods, going back to old diets, not old, but traditional diets. So we have our cultural revitalization as a part of our organization. We have the land acquirement, which is being done through modern means. And we also have a lot of our like youth programming in community outreach that we're doing. So we've hosted a number of different cultural groups, artist groups, dance groups. There was a group of Aboriginal youth that came after like hours and hours and hours of traveling. I think it was over like a day and a half just from like their home to like meeting us. And we were just honored to be able to have ceremony with them and to invite them to our main site in East Oakland. And the site is very special to us because it's the home of the first arbor in over about 250 years for California natives. So I think in this greater region, not just the Ohlone people, there aren't many tribes that have a ceremonial space. And in this space at our main site, we're hoping to open it that way we can have elders and youth, focusing on elders and youth specifically, to come together and do ceremony, to dance, to pray together, to have gatherings, to share food. Our organization is working mostly on bringing back the culture that was lost and healing from these the legacies of colonization, and also looking at how through modern means we have to acquire land and how we can stay connected to our community and keep them engaged with culture. And a big part of those things are our operations are funded by Shumi. So Shumi is a voluntary land tax that residents and owners in the Bay Area are able to pay. And it's based off of if you're a homeowner, if you're a renter, or if you have a certain income, so that there's a percentage that's calculated off of those factors. And then people that may identify as settler or non-Ohlone, but maybe another tribe or other communities would be able to voluntarily give this tax. And then another thing is like, when it comes to the community, when it comes to the home and how many different people call the Bay Area home, that's very important for us. And recognizing that many people have been displaced, different tribes have been relocated, different communities of color have been basically like forced here in order to find better opportunities, or they're fleeing their homes from terror. And then we look at like settlers, and it's like, then and now, and like how people are still being settlers in this community. And our organization is really all about like how we can all work together in this healing, and continue to provide that space for Ohlone peoples to reclaim their culture.
Beautiful. You mentioned a word at the beginning, rematriation, and I'm wondering if you could say a little bit more about what that means.
Yeah. So I don't know if there's like an exact definition, or like one person that coined it, but it's just a word that has been floating around the community, the intertribal community here in the Bay Area for a couple years. And I'm sure some literary authors have used it in their works as well, but to us, like, that meaning seems to, like, change every day, and it's, like, it's part of, like, us and, like, the things that we do, so it's in planting and learning about these certain crops or certain medicines. So you have the word repatriation, which is, you know, telling you, like, you're bringing back something to its traditional homeland, and that's masculine, but we move towards rematriation being an organization, and also recognizing that a lot of tribes and a lot of indigenous people around the world are matriarchal societies. So that's why we use rematriation instead of repatriation. But those terms have been used before when it comes to Karina having conversations around ancestral remains and saying that these remains need to be repatriated. But for the land itself and for our community and our relationships with each other, all of that is the practice of rematriation and listening to our elders, listening to the ancestral knowledge that's been passed down, listening to the earth, just like creating a, you know, fostering a bond with the earth and like being out there and working on the land, like you're learning in your own way what rematriation is. So there's like no like exact definition in my opinion, but I think that maybe each person will have a different idea of it, but it's all about that going back to what was once before and also bonding with the earth.
So I'm hearing that the work of Segorite Land Trust, and particularly around this concept of rematriation, is around healing from the generations of violence and loss and displacement through learning about traditional foods, medicine plants, listening to the elders, and following the lead of these indigenous women who are kind of leading the charge around the return of land and various kinds of cultural revitalization efforts.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ariel, do you want to go?
Okay, so we're gonna dive into these questions. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us what your organization focused on before coronavirus? Like, tell us a bit about that.
Mm-hmm. So I missed the part about after Corona, the main part. So right now we're doing food distribution, and which is great and amazing because we're able to work together safely outside when we like come together and we like sort everything, and then we go out into the community. And for a lot of us, we've been isolated after the shelter in place was declared. And then like, if there were any concerns around exposures, some of us had to isolate, just like being in like certain hotspots, like some of us decided to isolate. So it's always a good feeling to like be around your community and then like going out into the community and seeing people. And like, you know, even if you're like ringing their doorbell and leaving something is always a great feeling. So we've been able to do that with food and produce that comes from the Farms to Families grant, as well as directly from the Cultural Conservancy. And we've also just gotten a few things like rice and beans and food staples to add in to supplement a lot of these other food boxes. And we've also like for elders specifically in our community, or like family of our coworkers, we put in additional medicines and things, or we've had people donate sage and we'd let people know, come by to the office or the main site and we'll have sage ready for you. There was a big plant donation, so we had people come by, youth and elders sign up for a time to safely distance and get some plants so that way they can start up their community gardens or their home gardens. And then we're also collaborating with the American Indian Child Resource Center by, you know, sharing a space with them where their students are able to come out and garden as well. And then before that, we were doing a lot of the same things, but we weren't directly engaging with specific families in homes. So that's one thing that changed a lot for us. Like, we'd host a lot of people on the land and we'd go out to different farms and we'd have conversations about how we would acquire land or how we would put on a certain event or, you know, do interviews. But I think since the shelter in place, a lot of our work has shifted towards like the individual relationships with the community and seeing what they need, seeing what we need, and recognizing that, like, you know, when we're feeding everyone else, like, we got to make sure to feed ourselves as well. So just like every week, like, hey, I'm telling my coworker, like, I put you on the list because I'm going to make you a bag to make sure you have food this week. So, yeah. So before that, I think it was mostly about the, you know, conversations. And now it's like, okay, what do people actually need, and how do we get that to them? And before the shelter in place, we also started to learn how to process and create our own seed saving practices. That way we're more organized and we're able to share that with others if they need them, and to keep them organic and not modified. And also just that great feeling of like planting something, and maybe it came from the Southwest, or maybe it came from another territory. You plant that medicine, and then you see it grow, go through all these cycles. Then you go through processing and harvesting, and you're able to use every part of that plant. And then you keep those seeds and you plant again, and then you give like half of it to the community. I think that is also another thing that we really enjoy, that we started before March. And then making fire cider, making tinctures and salves, like that's some things that we were learning with other community members, like Planting Justice crew. I think they gifted us a bunch of salves, and then we just set up a time with an herbalist and we're like, we want to learn how to make these things. So that way we have them on hand, and like we can give them out to our staff and like our families, immediate families. And then eventually when we have the resources, we want to be at a point where we can like sell some of these things, as well as give them away, like sell the things that are appropriate to sell, and then other things that we would just give to elders, or give if someone comes and speaks at a panel with us, or they visit with us, we'd have a gift exchange with them.
All right, thank you. So when you said seed saving practices, is that like kind of just like growing your own stuff, or like what exactly is that? Is it that? Or?
Yeah. So like, but some of our seeds, like we get them from seed banks, we get them from other farms, other tribes. Like, we've reached out to a Southwestern seed bank, and they're giving out seeds to, free seeds to Southwestern tribal people. And then if you're not a Southwestern tribe, you're able to pay like a discounted rate if you are in need, and then like you can just generally buy seeds from them. So we got a couple samples from them, and so then we just plant them, and then like now we're like in that process of like figuring out how different seeds are processed. And so like that processing, including like when do we take them from the plant, how do we cut them, just like how would you harvest certain things, and then how do you dry them and how do you store them. And so I think for different plants it could vary, like tobacco seeds are very tiny, they're like the point of a ball pin almost. And then there are some seeds that come in pods, and they're a little harder to tell if the seed's actually in there. Like I think I had some basil seeds that I planted, and I planted in these trays, and every single tray that had like six spots, like a smaller one, only like three of them would sprout, and then the other three wouldn't sprout. And I was like, what's going on? And then I like opened them up, and I realized like some of the seeds weren't in there because they had already fallen out, or birds really like seeds. Like you really have to protect but like if you want to have like if you want to have sunflower seeds, then you have to like somehow cover it because the birds will get to it and they'll eat. And that's another thing. That's why I don't want to say protect. Like when we plant, we're planting for, because like plants like each other, we're planting for the other plants, we're planting for the animals because they need to eat too. And then like the plants themselves, like being good for the soil and the earth. So it's not just like, oh, we're planting so we can eat this and we can give it to people, but it's like we have to consider nature as well, and we have to consider animals as well.
All right, thank you.
So you talked a bit about the kind of work that Segorite did before coronavirus hit. So you mentioned gatherings and hosting various indigenous groups that would come visit. So how has the coronavirus impacted the organization?
So we had a meeting, I think, the day before the shelter in place was declared, because we were all monitoring the news, and we recently just adapted to using Signal, which has been interesting because we've been like chatting each other, like, I don't know, like we're like best buds. So we were like just always up to date on the news, because somebody would be like, did you see this or did you see that? And then for some reason, we just kind of, I think we all had this feeling like something was going to change. And then the day before, the governor was like, okay, we'll like shelter. Actually, no, the governor didn't decide that. It was six different counties in another city. So like Alameda County was like, stay home. So the day before that, we had a conversation about how we were all feeling that day. And we lit a fire. We had the fire going for most of the day. We offered tobacco. We prayed together. And then we just went around and we're like, well, you know, I don't know how I feel about it. I don't know much information. Or some people were like, I'm very concerned for my health and I'm also around immunocompromised people. And then others were like, well, I was, you know, hanging out with my friends and this and that and that. And then other people were like, well, maybe we shouldn't do that. So it was like, it was interesting because we were all at different points of like, some people were more concerned than others. Others were... seemed to be more prepared. Like, we were making this joke that one of our coworkers had his own like apocalypse show, because he was like, make sure you get this and that and have your go bag. And yeah, he had, at one point he just like came by and like gave me a bunch of supplies for like any disaster. So we had a conversation about it because we weren't really sure like what was going to happen, but we knew like a change was coming. And for those first 2 weeks, or actually maybe like more like a month, everyone was home. And that was hard because we're used to like laughing together a lot in like our staff meetings and being there in person. And outside of staff meetings, sometimes we'd also go to like our different land sites and meet together like we were doing that day. And that wasn't happening anymore. It took a minute for the administrative task to get back into the groove of doing our administrative tasks, because everyone was kind of taking a break. And I think also at that time, everyone was just like emotionally drained, physically just like worrying about illness and worrying about other people. So it's realizing that a change was going to happen, and then having like a really hard adjustment period of getting back into the groove, even if it was like stuff we could do from home and online. And then for the people on the land, there was always a concern around like some people not wanting to work around others because they were immunocompromised, or they were in a home of immunocompromised people. So it was hard because some projects needed at least like three people on them when it came to our construction. And then other ones, they were manageable, where you could go and water and weed and harvest on your own, but it still feels a little lonely in some ways, and like just being out there by yourself. So yeah, did that answer the question about how we changed? Okay.
Yeah, and so I guess a follow-up, so where did the food distribution, how, or let me rephrase that, let me just take a step back. Does the food distribution connect to part of the response, or was that something that happened before, or how does that fit in?
Yeah, definitely in a response to the shelter in place and like increasing amount of like COVID precautions and policies changing in like public places, as well as farm areas that we share with other organizations. So we started that, I believe, in April or May, I believe. I think it's only, actually, I think at the end of May, we started doing that. And the first day was just like, we got
like almost 80 boxes, and then there was only like 5 people that can work that day, and then we just started calling people like, hey, you need food, and then just like driving down the street talking to random people, be like, hey, you want a food box? So the first day was just like a free-for-all, and then we realized that, like, okay, like we could get boxes every week from Bay Cities, which was one of the grants that or like suppliers that has been doing a lot of or a lot more like I think discounted and also like free food boxes. So right now they're just like looking for people to distribute, but I believe before COVID they were selling a lot of their products, and like whether it was whole produce, sometimes they'd have prepackaged food and other things like that. But all of this came like in response after just having our discussions within our organization and then being in contact with our communities, and a lot of us also having families that are in other tribal communities like in Oregon or Arizona. And then as y'all may know, like the Navajo Nation having a really hard time with COVID, and it's just like here in the Bay Area, where there are already a number of disparities and just like related to health and food access, like that are now being like just like magnified because of COVID. So it came afterwards, after the shelter in place.
So what I'm hearing is that there was this time of kind of people really staying at home and maybe not knowing what was going to happen, and folks involved in the organization having discussions around kind of what are our needs and what are the needs of our community. And out of that, partnerships being built with other organizations in the East Bay, perhaps. And then from there, creating these food distribution, this food distribution program is it for Native people in particular? Is it for low income people, or mm-hmm. what's sort of like demographic?
Yeah, so when we got more organized, I created this form that was just kind of like a needs assessment. And I had also did this for the Giltrack Farm, because we have an area of land out there, and I'm also like the person that kind of like represents Sigourte at the farm. And I sit in at a lot of their meetings. So they had a food distribution set up there on another day, and we'd get boxes from them. And then we also had the Bay Cities boxes. Sorry, I just forgot what you asked.
So I was asking.
Oh, demographics. Sorry. Okay, got it. So we made this form. And the reason why the form came about is because at the Giltrack Inn, in our meetings, we were having discussions around like who has the highest need. And the Giltrack, being, although it is diverse and like the farmers there and the communities that we serve, it's definitely more of a white presence at that farm. So when we're having these conversations, oftentimes it was a lot of like educating and a lot of labor on the communities of color at the farm, because they're like, hey, like, racism has existed, like where have you been? So when we made the form, we made a focus on well, first and foremost, it was kind of like, if you say you need food, we're gonna trust that and we're gonna bring you food. We asked that people would pick up if they're willing and able, or if they could send a cousin or brother or sister, somebody that can come and pick up the food. If you're not able to do any of that, then we would deliver to you. And then we also have like instructions, like, would you want us to leave it on the porch? And, then we had this section that was completely optional. That way, like, people didn't feel pressured to fill it out, or maybe discouraged not to ask for food if in case they had to fill it out. But it was asking if you were immunocompromised, if you were Black, Brown, or Indigenous, if you, if you were a mother or pregnant, or I think it was like if you're pregnant or you have like a full house or you're like a multifamily unit. So like there's a lot of youth in the house. If you're formerly incarcerated or on bail, unemployed due to COVID, Another one, former foster youth or current foster youth, recognizing that there are some youth that may be legally emancipated or just living on their own right now. If you're houseless even if you don't put that on there, like say you don't have an address, just be like, meet us at 14th and Broadway and we'll bring you a box. So we've had a couple people meet them at their work, or we'd meet them out like wherever they had a little setup shop, because some people were houseless but they were able to vend at like the BART station, so we'd bring them a box that way. I had neighbors that I had got on the list, and like I specifically would like bring them the fruit because they didn't have access to a kitchen. At one of our sites, there's an encampment just beyond like the just beyond the creek on the other side of the freeway, and they were able to set up like a kitchen. So like we put them on the list, and then some people that we just like word of mouth, we heard like they were in need. So yeah, we had those like boxes, like if you were okay with checking them and just understanding that all that would be confidential. And it was just kind of like to see like on our end to see like, where's the highest need, and like the most boxes that were checked were, people identifying Black, Brown, Indigenous, being, like a big house or like kids in the house, being pregnant and immunocompromised. So maybe because you're working or you have to take care of your kids or you're not healthy enough to be outside, like you having that need to get something delivered.
That's super helpful. Okay.
Okay, so I kind of have a brief question. So from what I'm understanding for the food distribution, is there no specific location? It's kind of like if they need it delivered, you guys deliver it, or if they need it to be picked up at a certain place, that's what you guys do, or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. We have we moved around a little bit. So the first day we just had the boxes and we just started driving around in our trucks and our personal vehicles. And then the following few weeks, we were able to meet at the GoTrack community where one of the box distributors dropped a bunch of boxes. So we'd go there and then there'd be a crew preparing those boxes from the Farms to Family grant. And then separately, we would have someone wake up earlier in the morning, go to Bay Cities and bring the other boxes. That way we could put a certain amount in each vehicle. And then from there, we would just go out and send it to people. And we started to make the pickup list because some people were able to drive all the way to Albany. But most of our families were in Oakland and surrounding cities, like adjacent cities. So like even for myself, like having to drive to Albany for work days, it's like a little bit of a hassle because there's traffic and it's a longer distance. So we were thinking like, oh, can we do it at a closer location or a central location? That way we can get boxes from both distributors and meet in the middle. And we ended up deciding to go with our office, which is near downtown. So from there, for the past month, we've been picking up produce from the distributors. And then since then, we've also had the extra produce from the Cultural Conservancy. So then we set up everything outside. There's a big parking lot outside. We set up everything and we set aside the boxes that are going to bigger families. And then we start to make bags and smaller boxes for elders where there's probably only one or two people in the household or smaller household numbers. But now it's like it's probably like five people picking up, and then out of the whole list of like maybe like 110 or 120 people. And then the other thing that we did was we split up our list because we realized that there was too many people and we wouldn't be able to pick up the stuff, pack it, and then deliver it within a reasonable amount of time. So some people were just like going overtime because there was a lot of stuff to do. And then we had families all the way from like Albany to like San Lorenzo, and then a few scattered out like further beyond that, like in Hayward. So yeah.
All right, thank you.
So kind of thinking about all of the work that y'all have done around the food distribution, can you say a little bit about what has worked really well and maybe things that have not worked as planned?
Mm-hmm. What has worked well? Having like meetings beforehand and having a game plan, it definitely helps to calm nerves, because I think after we had a certain plan in mind, like after we had like the plan initially, like after those first few times, when we'd start to go about our plan, we'd notice like some things were like miscommunication was happening. Sometimes one of the distributors would try to give us 50 boxes instead of 75, and then we'd have to go back inside and be like, well, we signed up for 75. And like, they're very nice about it, but we were just kind of like, that was an extra 10, 15 minutes where we could have been already on the road, having to go all the way across town and like having to go from like San Leandro to Albany. So what is that, like, I don't know, 20 miles or something? I don't know exactly, but it takes like 25 minutes in good traffic. And then if there's traffic, it's bad. So planning helped a lot in having discussions about what it would look like. But when it came to actually like executing that plan, we'd realize that because of like miscommunication or maybe just like one person doing a job that another person's doing, it got like, you know, things were lost. So when it came to designating people to certain rows, roles, I think another problem we ran into is that we were always stressed out on these days because it was just so many people on the list. And we all were thinking about like that one time where we got up early. Most people got up early at 8, and then some people were picking up stuff and getting gas, and we met at 10 o'clock. And then finally going out and then finishing the day at like 7:30. So not ideal. And a lot of us are like, I don't want to do that again. I don't want to do that again. Or so the past month has been great because at the new location, it's central. We're able to have some people get there early and begin packing and redistributing the produce that comes separately. And then I've also just like been messing around with like spreadsheets, just that way so we can like have a count of like how many boxes are going out, how many bags are going out. And since the list has split, now I've been able to look at like when people are getting food. So, and when we ask them how many people are in the household, like that helps us to distribute the food. So like if we get, if we have like 5 extra food boxes that could go to a smaller family, instead of doing that, we'll break open the boxes, redistribute them, add in extra produce, and then from that we could make like another 15 bags or another 15 smaller boxes.
So sort of some of what I'm hearing about the things that have worked really well that maybe you would continue on is things around having a centralized location, creating spreadsheets that help to document when people get food and the particular extent of the need, and the discussions and planning ahead of time, even though there have been instances where things have not gone as planned. And so those are sort of some things that would be helpful to continue practicing into the future. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I don't know if you heard me. I said yes.
Ariel, do you want to go?
So were some of the problems you guys faced long days from like 8 in the morning to like 7 at night, or?
Yeah, well, actually like more like every day, like, well, like I was, this is kind of me telling on my organization where like I was just put in charge of it, and I was just kind of like, oh, okay, sure. because I was the first person that stepped up to do like something to help us plan. So then they're like, oh, Najoni's in charge. And I was like, huh? And then it took me a second, but then I realized like, okay, well, I'm in charge. I'm going to set out a plan. And then, like, I'm noticing, like, even just this past Tuesday, yeah, we just had it yesterday, I'd be like, okay, you go and do this, I'm going to start on this, and then somebody would come in the office, what's going on? I'm like, okay, you go do this, I'm doing this, they're doing that. Another person comes in the office, and it's like, we just had a meeting about this. So again, I'm telling on some people because we'd have like a separate meeting beforehand, and like I've had another coworker come in and help me with the spreadsheets and also helping with lead these meetings. And I guess just because of being on Zoom so much, a lot of us are like having a lot more screen time than usual, and it's also hard not being in person most of the time. So I noticed that like we're in a meeting and we plan something, and then the day of, some people will be like, what time do I get the truck? what should I do? Like, and we're like, we just set this out. But so that's something that we've encountered that has definitely like been time consuming. And I think it just happens every time. And I understand that some people have those days, because like I'll like I have a very like bad short-term memory. So like for me, it helps to like pull up the list on my phone to print it out for people that want something like in their hands. And then even like the day before, to say like, okay, I'm going to put your name here, and then I'm going to put the task that you're doing. So that way people can open their phones, look at the notes from that meeting. But I'd say it's just like really random stuff from like coming in after like one person had already explained what we're doing. Or another thing is, I think we're all very like very helpful, and we're very nice about like lending and helping hands. So like everyone will have a job, and then once one person finishes, they're like, oh, let me help you. But then they start helping, and then it throws off the process because they're doing it a different way than the other person is. So we haven't quite nailed the assembly line, but the good thing is that, I don't know, we're very helpful people, and we're very like kind and nice to each other. But I think it's just like the actual, like, okay, this is what's being done, and this is how we do it. And then, you know, streamlining all of that. I think that's what our problem is. But things get done at the end of the day, which is good.
That's good. Thanks.
And I wonder too, if, you know, the organization is really a grassroots organization, and you're sort of like starting, in some ways I'm thinking about, you know, there is a lot of success that's happened, and it's been by folks like kind of learning how to do it as the need has come. And so it's sort of like, you know, figuring how to do things, because maybe this is not something that has ever been done before to this extent. Mm-hmm. And so in that regard, I'm wondering, kind of looking back, what are some of the things that y'all might have done differently?
Back. Well, I would have paid attention more in school. I would have listened to it. And I'm kidding. looking back, I guess one thing that we were doing, what you're mentioning about like learning, like as we're going, like, I've been looking at like how other organizations are doing food distribution, how they set up their intake forms. And then something that an elder suggested to me was, or it's something that they're doing actually, they're going to different farm stands and they're looking at how they do their safe practices. And from that person was able to come back to the GoTrack farm and set up all of our safety protocols during COVID, like when it comes to being on the farm and being a farmer. And then for specifically to our farm stand on Sundays, there's a whole other set of protocols. So through like conversations with that person, who's also a health professional, I've been able to like put together like our office protocols, our workplace protocols when it comes to the shelter in place and just overall like your health. And then also like a set of instructions for things that we do on the day of food distribution. So one thing for me is like I would have hoped to have those conversations earlier, or begin to think about a lot of what they were saying and how I could apply it to this workplace. And then I guess being like having meetings early on, because we actually decided probably like a month into doing the food distribution that we wanted to have meetings separate from our staff meetings. That way we give enough time and attention to how that day will go or certain needs. So there was actually a coworker that stepped back recently because they would have to bring their kids along with them, and it was kind of like, you know, just being concerned about like the kids always hugging people and like, so it's like it's hard to maintain the safe distance practices, but like their kids are so like cute that they want to like hug everyone and like help, be helpful. And we did a few days with the kids with us, which is great, because another thing that we're able to do is like, if you know, if their parents, they're able to bring their kids with them. Some people are grandparents, like I'm an aunt, like I brought my nephews to the office with me or bring them to the land with me when it was before March. So it's been great to be able to do that. But we also like are just like responding to her specific need of like, okay, I need to step back because it's hard to like make sure that my kids are following the practices, and it would also just be safer for everyone else. So we make sure to like accommodate each other's needs, and but yeah, having the meetings earlier and also doing our like our research and like how other people are operating food distributions and food stands and different produce give outs.
So, what do you think would help help you with your new initiatives?
More people. with different schedules changing, we've seen that. We've also changed our day, I think, a couple times, which might have caused some confusion. So just to go back, like that was another thing, like having a set day, and the reason for that was that one of our distributors changed their day. So I think one thing that would help us is that was the question, right? What would help us to be, okay. By having more people, I think and like safely having them in the same place, we'd be able to have like a crew come in early and begin to do the the repackaging and receive the produce from the person that comes in the morning. And then we'd have like some people in the afternoon moving the boxes around and getting ready to go out, and then we'd have the drivers separately going and distributing. So we went from three vehicles the first day, and then the following weeks we had two of our trucks and two personal vehicles, and then now we're down to one truck, one personal vehicle. So only like four people came last week. So it's like if we had a pool of people to pick from, and we've had people reach out and say like, hey, I want to help, I want to volunteer. And we thought about the possibility of having volunteers drop off food or help us with the packing. But we're being very cautious about it because we've actually put a hold on all of your volunteering at every single site. And once it's safe, we want to be able to welcome in volunteers to help us with that. That way they could, we could split up our list more, and we'd have like seven routes instead of at minimum two, and like on good days having four different routes.
Okay. So do you think that the decrease in like the trucks and people coming in is because of like the numbers of coronavirus going up, or like, why do you think that that's happening?
I think it's related, but it's not like a direct cause of it. I think just the way that things are now and how we like have our public and workplace has definitely like, it's caused like, I think it's caused like negative things like fear and paranoia. And then on the other end, it's maybe like encourage people to be more aware or to be safer about certain things or to be more hygienic. I hope they were hygienic before. But I think a lot of our problems with that was that it was just life happening. And like, even if it wasn't COVID, it would still would have happened. Like, one of the drivers, like the one of the only people other than like Karina who doesn't do the food distribution anymore, the only other driver that could drive stick, like his car was broken and it was in the shop and he was like all the way like in, I think he lives in Hayward or something like that. So it's like for him to like come all the way over here and then figure out how to get home without his own transportation was a was something that, you know, we were just like, okay, it's cool, we can do it without you. And then there's some people that were like, they communicated they weren't able to come that day just because they've been having a lot of like personal things that they're going through, and they've been working in other sites and like being socially distant and doing that. So I think it's just like the times, like in some way, like maybe affecting a lot of our daily schedules and our emotions, but nothing like too out of the ordinary, like it wouldn't happen at any other time.
Okay, thank you.
So you mentioned distributors, and I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about that. So are the distributors organizations that y'all have partnered with before? Is that a new thing? Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah. So one of them is Bay Cities. This is a new, not exactly a partnership. I think we just signed up to be one of the organizations to receive free food boxes from them. So our interaction has just been once a week getting boxes. and like the initial conversation that Ariel had to set that up. And I believe they've been like around for maybe like a decade or so. I've just heard of them, but I think they mainly focused on like organizations and companies. And because it's like a huge warehouse. And the other one is the Cultural Conservancy, and they have access to like farming land, and they also do a number of other things. Like I've gone to some of their workshops where we learn about corn processing, the different types of corn, and we're learning directly from I think it's Oneida tribal, two people of the Oneida Nation. So they have all kinds of like cultural stuff and as well as farming knowledge. And that has just been like, being in the community, the contact person that Karina, the person that reached out to Karina had like met me at a different organization in a different job, and I think has been in conversation with Karina for the past couple of years. So that just came naturally, like the community talking with each other. And then the other one was the Farms to Family Grant, which we actually like we stopped doing because we didn't want to split our distribution into 2 days. So we've told, there were three organizations that we were delivering to in addition to our families. So I just reached out to them, had them sign up for the grant directly. Alternatives in Action is a high school, and a nonprofit organization. There's also an African Diaspora Center in North Oakland, so I signed up to contact there. And then another one is Tuha, I think, something like that. It's like it's like a trauma center that's based outside of, or it's based inside of one of the La Clinica offices. So we had like 35 boxes, sometimes 40 boxes. It would always fluctuate, and we ended up just like redistributing those boxes to other people and having them directly contact that grant. But yeah, that's it so far.
So I want to be respectful of time. So I think we'll end there for today. And I forgot to mention in the recording that this is August 5th, 2020.